Welcome to Bengals Scribe Session, presented by JosephOtto.com and Inquirer Sports. Here, your Bengals beat writers Paul Daner Jr. and Richard Skinner escort you inside the walls of Paul Brown Stadium to hear the news, analysis, and observations unfolding within the team from those documenting it daily. All with the sidecar of snark and absurdity you've come to expect. Let's go. We're about to start a party in here. He's made strums and guitar in here.
Up in the air. AJ Green makes the catch.
Oh man!
A deflected ball winds up in the hands of AJ Green and the clock hits zero.
All right, welcome to the latest edition of Scribe Session.
You are?
Yes. I'm excited.
It's a great way to start.
That's it. Paul Daner Jr. here, Richard Skinner. We are here to talk about the Bengals and their win over the Houston Texans. Makes it two in a row as they go through the Thanksgiving week. Happy Thanksgiving to all of our listeners. We love you.
We love you.
We love you.
If you're listening to this on Friday, hopefully the tryptophan didn't get you too bad. Yeah. Hopefully the belt's unloosened, and hopefully you're having, which is the best part of Thanksgiving, Paul. You know what the best part of Thanksgiving is?
Don't give me the leftover turkey sandwich.
Oh, absolutely the leftover turkey sandwich.
That is so weak.
That's my favorite.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah, because honestly, Thanksgiving Day's a hassle.
No, it's not.
It is
a hassle.
It's
delicious.
It's delicious, but it's a hassle.
What are you doing on Thanksgiving?
We're going to some friend's house, which I enjoy that. I really do, but...
What's the hassle of going to a friend's house and eating their food?
Because honestly, I'd rather lay on my couch and just watch football and eat my own food.
Yeah. I mean, are you in charge of, like, cooking or cutting the bird up?
Not an ounce. Now, we cooked the bird last year and took it over. I don't know if we're responsible for the bird this year or not.
Because there will be leftover bird. So, like, if you were involved in the full
kitchen experience. We make the green bean casserole. We make the stuffing.
Yeah.
And I think we split making the bird, and then they make the rest. It's a very nice time. We do
have
a nice time.
I have an absolute unhealthy addiction to stuffing at Thanksgiving.
Really,
any turkey. You have no idea.
Oyster stuffing?
It started a long time ago. We would always get together with an inner circle of family, you know. So about, 8 to 10 people typically. And what would happen is they would have two giant bowls of stuffing. One would be for me, and one would be for the other 7 to 9 people that are there, because I love it so much. I mean, I don't know what it is, and to the point where, I mean, it doesn't matter. Stovetop, I don't
just
care.
Just any stuffing.
Just, I don't know why I find it addictive and delicious.
Who makes the stuffing? Who makes the stuffing that you enjoy so much?
Sometimes, I mean,
Mom,
you know. Well, I mean, I've obviously made it for myself on occasion
stovetop.
At Thanksgiving.
From stovetop.
Absolutely from stovetop.
Is actually quite delicious stuffing, I might add.
No, yeah, I mean, Mom will make it, or sometimes it comes from stovetop even on Thanksgiving. That's
nothing wrong with that.
Absolutely nothing wrong. I know I am incredibly partial. It's one of the things I most look forward to on Thanksgiving.
Let me give you
the stuffing bowl.
One of the things in my household back in the day when my mother and father were alive, my mother made something called ramaki. Do you know what ramaki is? This was like the appetizer during the day.
What's ramaki?
Bacon wrapped chicken livers. Outstanding.
Well, if you wrap bacon over just about anything,
just about anything,
it's a pretty good deal.
Bacon wrap cardboard would probably even be good.
I'll pass on that.
I don't know.
How much bacon
off and go. Lots of bacon.
Okay.
Lots of bacon. Little cardboard.
Yeah, that's fine.
Cardboard gets chewy.
Oh man, yes. No, I'm excited about Thanksgiving. It's just a great holiday. A lot of good games actually. There's a good slate. You get you got the Eagles and the Cowboys. Then you get San Francisco and Seattle in the night game.
Great game.
Those are big games for Thursdays. And you talk about a tough – those teams are both coming off some physical games. I mean, Seattle just
Seattle game was just a pounding.
Yeah, just a grinder against Arizona.
And really, so was Frisco's against Washington. I mean, they had to rally to win that game late.
And now they've got to come turn around a few days later on Thanksgiving night and crank out the biggest game of their season. Because Arizona's so far ahead, that this could basically be a wild card elimination game almost between these two.
Yeah, I think it probably is.
Yeah.
But you know what the best game of Thanksgiving is, don't you? It is.
Is it an actual football game or some game that you play?
Chicago-Detroit, because the Detroit meltdown is about to occur yet again. Oh, they are so bad on offense. They are dreadful on offense.
It doesn't matter, because here's the thing, though. They're about to play the easiest run. They've got Chicago.
This is when the Bears reel you back in as a Bears fan. They come up with the big win on Thursday.
The Bears fans are not happy.
Oh, they booed the whole first half yesterday. They were unmerciful.
It reminded me of what happened here against Cleveland.
Yes, it did. We'll touch on that here in a little bit.
We will touch on that a little bit. But I mean, it was the league is starting. It's that time now.
It is,
where people are sensing the elimination, that a season has gone wrong, and it's time to start casting blame. We got our old friend Jay Gruden, who is. Had it up to here with RG3.
He can't stand him.
You know what a point I want to make about him going off on RG3 last week is that the whole time that Jay Gruden was here, he never once threw Andy Dalton under the bus. And he could have over and over again. He never once.
Why do you think that is? Because really, Andy Dalton wasn't his guy to some degree.
No, it was his guy.
Well, okay.
He drafted Andy Dalton. He fought for Andy Dalton. He believed he was a fit for his system. So my point being, I think it makes it readily apparent that Jay Gruden is trying to run RG3.
There's no question. He will not be the quarterback there next year. No. Or Jay Gruden somehow won't be the head coach there. One of the two.
Yeah, well, it depends if Daniel Snyder wins or not.
That's a good point.
Which he normally does. He's very rich.
God, a one-year head coach again, though? Holy mackerel.
Yeah. Well, we're a bit off topic. Anyway, lots of interesting things happening.
Yes.
The same thing would be happening here if the last 2 weeks didn't go the way that they went, though, right? I mean, if the last 2 weeks would have gone LL.
Oh, they were done.
They'd been toast, and we'd be sitting here talking about everything that's starting to happen now in Chicago, in Washington, all these places around the league, Atlanta, even though they could be in first place depending on the result of the Monday night game. Mike Smith, you know, he's supposed to be gone. Mike Smith should have been fired on Sunday, all that could have been happening here if this team wouldn't have found a way to rally and put this together.
I think it shows something. It shows that with the whole next man up stuff is great to hear and talk about, but really this team couldn't afford next man up this year for whatever reason. You look at a couple of those losses; they were injury related. A couple of those losses were also opponent related. New England has not lost in 7 weeks, for goodness sakes. They have shown to be really good. Indy in their building is a pretty good football team. And the Cleveland game's the one kind of outlier because it was at home, all that stuff. But really, you look at the three losses the Bengals have this year, two of them, no matter how you would have sliced it, you could almost say, yeah, they weren't going to go to New England and win.
But they were so bad.
They were, and they were so bad in Indy. But at the end of the day.
That's what I mean.
An L is an L, brother.
An L is an L, but it speaks larger when you're non-competitive. And we've talked about that before. But I think the point is that this team in the last 2 weeks has absolutely resurrected its season.
It's done a 180 in a lot of ways. It's
what did we sit here and say over and over again? We said the offense and inconsistency, people ripping on Dalton and all that stuff.
It'll work itself out.
It'll work itself out. It felt more like an anomaly, whereas the defense seemed like that was the problem.
Now, I do think they've played to Andy's strengths very much the last 2 weeks. I think they've done what they have not made him do things that he's not capable of doing.
Again, another game with the quick passing game. Football Focus had the ball out of his hands at 1.88 seconds on average, which is an insane number. Usually they judge it by 2.5 seconds, considering where you want to kind of get out. 1.88.
And it stunned me the first half how
Houston played right into it.
Played absolutely right into it. Never played press coverage. Never just said, hey, we need to find a way to get our pass rush. Your pass rush is not getting home in 1.88 seconds.
No.
No matter how good J.J. Watt is, no matter how bad Marshall Newhouse is, he's not getting around him in 1.88 seconds. It literally, Paul, there were a lot of plays it didn't feel like Andy even dropped. It was almost catch it, gone. Catch it, gone.
Yeah.
It was brilliant.
Yeah, no doubt.
And especially
about
when the other team's telling you, you want an 8-yard hitch route? God, go ahead. You go ahead and take the 8 yards. Yep. We're good.
Yeah, I mean, and so we've seen Dalton playing to his strengths, and teams, the good teams are eventually going to figure that out, you would think. Finding a way to not let him do that and force him into the deeper throws.
But they also don't have, a lot of teams don't have J.J. Watt.
Yeah, that's true. Who the Bengals held relatively in check, all things considered.
Because of that, primarily.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, the quick passing game was a big part of it. But the overall point is, as much as we talked about that, and as much everybody loves to think the season was hanging on Andy Dalton's right arm, that was never the case.
Agreed.
The case was, if this defense, particularly the run defense, couldn't find a way to right itself, you could forget it because they weren't beating a soul. And it has. We talked a little bit about it last week, but this week to me, and now you see this now going forward into the stretch run here, was all about finding consistency. It was about finding that this team could stop going from the good 1 week to the awful the next. We'd seen so much of that up and down that you didn't know they could string a couple games together. Now, I'm okay to admit, I was incorrectly predicting the last 2 weeks. I predicted an L in New Orleans, and I predicted an overtime coin flip loss in Houston. My logic being, I felt that until this team proved that it could put two good games together back to back, I logically couldn't go down that path of picking them to do it until they proved they could.
Yeah, right. And
that's why I thought this was a huge step at Houston for them to go and prove it. I thought it went a long way to string those two games back to back to prove that maybe they are finding that consistency that they need.
And you could argue they did that early in the season, but they also did that against
there was a lot of different things going on there.
Against two bad teams in Atlanta and Tennessee, and both of those at home. These two being on the road against albeit a team that's still sub 500, but a team that'll probably still find a way to win its division.
In September was a lot of problems ago.
Right. You're exactly right, and that your analysis was not unfair, but now that you've seen it, you go, okay, maybe this team has turned the corner a little bit. Now, granted, it was against a rookie quarterback, and you were able to do some things against him.
Who apparently had a torn pectoral.
Who was playing injured yesterday. Nonetheless, you just played two games on the road and really control both of those. I mean, I know yesterday ended up being closer than what it probably should have, but you literally control both of those. The defense in two games, Paul, allowed how many touchdowns? One.
Single one.
Yeah. One touchdown.
Which was more of a prevent defense type thing.
Yeah.
It was towards the end of a game, not prevent defense, but, they were trying to make them run clock.
And they did. If you remember, the New Orleans drive,
it was a six-minute drive, I believe.
Now, New Orleans wasn't in any hurry, it didn't seem like, but you're right.
No,
it was,
that was part of it.
But you played in your hands.
It was full of checkdowns.
Yep.
So the defense has clearly come a long way, and, the impact of Ray Malugu was felt. You saw it again with the safety. This is a perfect example, okay? So you see the safety, and you can see on that play, they bring Reggie Nelson down off the one side, and they watch Mallett check the run away from the blitz.
And they all slanted.
And the second they saw him check the other way, Pecco moves over, Maluga immediately charges down in that gap, and they blow up the entire play. It was like candy from a baby.
It's funny, even if Alfred Blue had tried to reverse field because Manuel Lemur was coming from the backside 100 miles. I mean, it was almost like all 11 defenders were in the end zone encircling him, and he had almost like, I give up. You got me for the safety. I'm good.
Yeah.
I mean, that was good. You're right. As soon as the handoff occurred, I even looked and went, that's a safety. I mean, there's no question. They had it pinned from the get-go. There was no escape route.
Yeah, between Domantas Pecco, Ray Maluga, and then Gino with the finish at the end. I mean, it was perfectly diagnosed. Paul Gunther, took a lot of heat on this program. Everything that's been written by just about anybody mid-season when we started running through what had occurred to that point. I think he deserves a lot of credit. I gave him a game ball after the Houston game.
Did he enjoy it?
I did not actually give it to
him.
Oh,
okay.
I gave him a fictional Inquirer game ball.
Oh, dude, that's better than a real game
ball.
That is.
I'm sure it's hanging on his mantle.
It's
got
to cut out right now.
Yeah, no doubt. It's probably he's sending it to his mom to put on her fridge.
No question.
So, but
look what my son Paulie got.
Yeah.
boy at the newspaper thinks he's doing a good job.
Paul Diener really likes him.
But I feel like that's a hard thing to do as a first-year coordinator, to pull a team out of a bad place.
The one thing I will tell you, though, is we talked to a lot of players when things were going bad, and they all continued to have his back. That was the thing I thought was interesting. Now, granted, you think, hey, you're still having a winning season. You're still in position to do some good things. But you've seen teams when they get in certain circumstances like that. You lost a beloved defensive coordinator. New guy comes in with some new ideas, some new wrinkles. Works early, then all of a sudden stops working. There's reasons why, but stops working. Be easy for a couple veterans to start going, hey, look, I don't know what he's trying to do, but we can't do it. Not once, not one time.
Yeah, they really were on board.
And they went out of their way. I mean, as outspoken as Adam Jones is, he went out of his way a couple of times to point out how well he thought Pauly G called games or prepared for games.
Yeah, no doubt. And the defense has he seems to have pulled them out. I mean, if you can go to New Orleans, do what they did, and then repeat it the next week, and we'll see what happens as they go to Tampa Bay this upcoming weekend. A bit of a resurgent offense, but still. Josh McCown is
brutal.
Josh McCown.
Brutal.
And they can't run.
They can't run a lick.
I mean, if you can stop Mike, and that's, you love the Bengals.
Vincent
advantage.
Jackson's older. Mike Evans is really good.
Vincent Jackson's been pretty good, though, this year. He's played pretty well. But if there's one area where the Bengals are strong, it's at their corners.
Absolutely.
And not allowing the deep passes. And that's really been the key to everything that Tampa's tried to do. The fact that they can't run the ball, it's actually a nice little matchup for
it
the
is.
Bengals.
I agree.
Of course. It's always a nice little matchup when you go against a team that's 2-9, but there's a reason they are. What were we talking about? where was I going with that, Skinny?
You're leading the show, man.
I
just
am
follow.
Leading the show. Oh yeah, yeah. I know what we're talking about. You ready for this?
Yes.
Okay. So I want to bring in Paul Gunther, who we talked to today. It just real quickly a brief bit of the beginning of our conversation with him, talking about some of the reasons for the resurgence and his belief of where the consistency has come from. So here's Paul Gunther from Monday.
We've talked about really not just with you guys in this room, but really across the team, is trying to find that consistency, avoiding the highs, peaks, and lows. Was this kind of the biggest version of that for you guys to have these two back to back?
Well, obviously, you know, they're two good home teams we played. One, you know, one team last week against New Orleans who, you know, were really running the ball good, but obviously, you know, they've been a good passing team in the past, particularly in their building. I know they're averaging over 30 a game. So to hold them to 10 points, and really the one touchdown we gave them last week, it was kind of self-inflicted. And then to hold, you know, this team, which we've never won there since I've been coaching, we've never won in Houston. You know, and they rushed for over 200 yards last week against Cleveland. To hold them down to two field goals is something that we can really build off of for sure.
Yeah. A lot of guys talked about it just being an attitude change. Is it? How much is that, and how much is there something different in what you guys are doing with stabilization that Ray's brought and things like that?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, it always helps out when you have all your guys out there. Now, obviously, you know, the only guy that we didn't have yesterday was Vontaze. So when he comes back, he's going to give us an extra boost. So, you know, it keeps guys fresh. You know, Vinny Ray, he's been playing a lot. I think he's got the most snaps in the linebacker group right now. But, you know, certainly having Ray back, he understands the systems and the checks, and the communication's a lot smoother. You know, when you have different guys in there, and you know, you got to not so much be vanilla, but you can't put too much on their plate because they got to think about their own jobs. And so having those guys in there really, really helps out. And obviously, we've changed a couple things here and there in the running game just to give us a boost in some areas, but we got to continue playing at this level so we can take the runs away. And obviously, we've been doing a good job for the most part in the back end, not giving up any big pass plays, so that's been good, and we got to keep it going.
You know, I think, man, Ray Maluga has gone from hated
the villain on defense.
The villain on defense to everyone's hero. He's played great.
I mean, he's
you got to give him some credit.
He looks like, you know what he looks like? the guy you drafted out of USC that you watched in college go all over the field making tackles and playing reckless and thinking, wow, what a great pickup this is. What a great draft selection this is. That's the guy he's looked like the last 2 weeks.
He joked around after the game with us that if he would lose a few more pounds, he would have been able to score on the interception.
he got himself spun around, unfortunately.
Yeah, he's going to work on that. But, you know.
You talk about a guy who looked like he knew what was coming, man. He looked like he knew what was coming.
Yeah. Ryan Mallett, not a great.
No.
Not a great play. But, you know, you got to give. It's just amazing. And I just thought, I would love to go back because my Twitter feed became full of. I've always liked Wright. Why? What do you mean? Because I tweeted about how, you know, he's gone from GOAT to absolute hero in the fans' eyes in about two games. And I got all this. Oh, I always thought Ray Maluga was great. No, you didn't.
No,
nobody did.
No, you didn't.
This guy was one of the most hated Bengals that I can remember my 5 years covering a team for pretty much a good run of the last year and a half. I mean, people just despised him. It was how Vinny Ray needs to start. I mean, let's. I would love that those people that were saying that. I want to go back and check their Twitter feed from a year ago.
No question.
See exactly what they were saying because we know what it was. You got to give the guy credit for playing well so far. And if Vontaze Burfict comes back, you have another lift that could really provide. Now, when that will be, we still continue to sit and wait and wonder. Now at this point, I mean. When this first happened, we were sort of under the impression that it wouldn't be that big of a deal.
No, in fact, there was some belief. There was a small belief.
He could come against New Orleans
and
play.
Correct.
And now here we are, you know, over a month later, right? Or coming up on a month.
Coming up on a month.
And Vontaze Burfict still working out on the side last week. We saw him on the side once, right?
A little bit, yeah. A little bit.
And
Friday.
Which is a step because we hadn't seen him out there at all.
Yeah, so people have a little background, a little frame of reference. The week before Giovanni Bernard started practicing, he worked on the side for 3 days. And then last week started practicing on Wednesday, practiced Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, then played. So I was wondering if maybe that was the same step that Vontaze was taking, but he didn't work quite as much or quite as long or probably quite as hard as Gio worked in the days that he was doing it. And the big litmus test is, will he be on the field on Wednesday? Because I think if he's not on the field on Wednesday, probably won't be on the field on Thursday, hence won't play again on Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, it's the
and it is. It's a knee. It's a knee. He had knee surgery. No matter how, you know, minor we sometimes think that is and can be, it's still being cut on. Your knee is still getting cut on. And he had a pebble taken out of it, for lack of a better term.
A pebble. And you've got to, you know, you've got to deal with that and find a way to come back. And you're talking about a knee. It's not always easy, particularly for a guy like him. So, I mean, who knows where that's at? But at some point, I think there is a thought that he will be back.
Yeah, and I think it's a case of let his recovery dictate when you do it. You don't need to force him back right now. If he's 60%, 70%, no. If you have to wait till he's 100% and he's confident 100% and every, that's when you get him back.
Yeah. So we'll continue to monitor what exactly is happening there, and you know the other thing, I think if you look at what's been a big difference with this team has been their special teams. I don't know that people realize this, but Kevin Huber is having like an all-time NFL great season. The last six game run he's on has been incredible. I mean, I was talking with Darren Simmons.
And it started with the Indy game when he punted 1,523
times? Yeah. Pretty much. I mean, if you look at it.
See, he got a lot of good work in there. It worked out well for him.
He did. I mean, it got him hot.
Leg got loosened up, ready to go.
I mean, let's take a look at this. Okay, so over the last six games, they've averaged a net of 46.1 yards per punt, gross of 49.8, so almost 50.
Yep.
Gross. 46 net. You know what the NFL record is for net in a season?
45.8.
44.2.
Wow.
Is set last year by Johnny Hecker for St. Louis Rams.
How about that?
Okay.
Who punted quite a lot.
Punted quite a lot for the Rams. So over the last six games, he's been about 2 yards better than the NFL record. And he's currently 0.3 yards behind Pat McAfee of Indianapolis for the NFL lead. And if the season ended, both of them will have broken the NFL record.
I think his net, I'm doing this off the top of my head, Paul, I think his net last year was just a hair under 40 or maybe just a hair above 40-something, which is a good number. But you're talking now, he's almost...
He's at 44.2 now this year.
Yeah, so if you take that number and you add maybe the other team being, you know, 37, 38, you're talking about a full first down every time you're flipping field position.
And every punt.
And, you know, you hear the whole cliche of hidden yards, but they start to add up.
It was. Here's your adding up hidden yards, okay?
Average, you had a good stat. I said you had a great stat
average
in the fifth quarter.
Average field position yesterday was Houston at their own 16
yes.
and the Bengals at their own 30. Now, there were 21 possessions. So essentially, take that times 10. So each possession.
200 yards.
10, 140 yards, basically, in hidden yards. I mean, That's a game changer.
It's funny, you know, the Bengals hit a couple of big plays, not big, but, you know, 18, 20-yard gains. So you're starting at the 30, you hit an 18-yard gain. Now you're at the 50. Now you've opened up some other things in the playbook. It felt like a couple of those Houston drives where they grinded out like a couple, three first downs, and you look up and they're at their own 38 still.
Right.
I mean, there's the difference right there.
Yeah. And you know, you can say, oh, well, they started a drive at their one. Well, yeah, that's true. But you're still, even with that said, you're still at a huge advantage. And the Bengals.
And Nugent kicked it out of the end zone twice.
Only twice this year have the Bengals not won the average drive start stat at New Orleans when they were the victim of a goal line of a goal line stand. They still won by 5 yards in the average right. drive start. And if you count that possessions, you're looking at 45, 50 yards in hidden yards there as well. I mean, they are really killing teams on special teams. I want to bring in Darren Simmons, so I spoke with as well on Monday. And he had some really interesting things today.
And for those who right now are going, who is Darren Simmons?
Darren Simmons is one of the most underrated aspects of this team. I think Darren Simmons is an incredible coordinator, and the job he has done this year has been game-changing for the Bengals, not only in what he's been able to do and giving Pac-Man more opportunities back there. And people say it should have happened earlier, but...
But he did it.
But he did it. I mean, and he's also partially under marching orders from those above him. You don't think that he would want to bring Adam
Absolutely.
Jones back for every kick. You better believe it. It was just part of him trying to fight that battle.
Because Adam, for those who don't, because Adam's on the field so much as a third corner,
for
and because of some injury issues, even a second corner a lot of times issues.
Yeah.
So
I mean, what he's done with it, what he's been able to do with Huber, and what he's been able to do with Mike Nugent, overcoming what happened against Carolina, really backing him, and now Mike Nugent has hit 8 in a row, including the 49-yarder that put the game away. Really the first clutch kick we've seen him have to make since the Carolina
miss.
And it was
really clutch, because just the way momentum goes in the league.
And they've been getting the ball right there at the 40.
At the 40-yard line, with still plenty of time to then march down the field and win that game somehow 2019. He makes that field goal, that's it.
Yeah.
Game over.
So Darren Simmons, who I think is an absolutely underrated member of this coaching staff that people should know more about. Here's a little bit with him talking about the effect that he's seen from his special teams group this year.
I've never been under the notion that guys block harder because one guy's back here and one guy's right. Versus somebody else. I've never felt that way at all. I don't know how, as a competitor, you could physically do that. But I do think our players sense it. You know,
yeah.
They feel the excitement that he can bring at any point. You know, because they see it on tape. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, they watch the tape. They watch the plays. You know, after the game, just like we do, and they marvel, like I do. Mm-hmm. So I do think they sense it. Yes.
Yeah. Nuge. I mean, he's been since Carolina. He's been great. This was the first. Kick at the end of a game with maybe the pressure mounting again a little bit. Is that a big thing to knock that one in as opposed to the previous seven?
Oh, I think it's a bigger thing for everybody else than it is for him or for me. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what he does. He had a hiccup in the Carolina game. Something was unlike him. You know, you're defined, I think, by your last kick, or you're only as good as your last kick. And you know, I think in his mind, in my mind, everybody's mind, at least in everybody's mind around here, we let that play go after it happened. Mm-hmm. and he's been very solid. He's been, you know, it all starts in practice, you know, and he's had however many weeks it's been, 5 weeks ago now, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. I think he's missed one kick in a team setting in practice since that really? Game. So, you know, if you're looking for a true indication of how somebody's going to perform, you can just go back to practice, and it's showing up in practice. I mean, he's kicking well in practice, and obviously I understand the games are different. The pressure of the situation is different. But, you know, there's a couple things that came up in the play, you know, in the Houston game, that we've learned from over time. We had a play several years ago in the preseason against Detroit where it got into the two-minute warning. And, you know, it's something we hadn't really talked about, but, you know, Mike stood out there on the field for the whole two-minute warning and kind of iced himself and ended up missing the kick in a preseason game. But he's learned from that now that, you know, it was a two-minute warning, if you remember. So he went out on the field and he jogged back off and went still over on the sideline and waited. Mm-hmm. You know, waited for him to blow the whistle, and then or the ball's ready for play, then he runs right back out there like, you know, I'm good. So I think the point is he's focusing more on the process rather than the result. The kick, you know, he's focused more on his routine.
How important was it for you right after that game to just make sure he was in a good place mentally?
Well, I think that's my job.
Yeah.
I think it's my job. It's part of my job.
Yeah.
Is managing emotion as much as it is managing calls or technique or whatever else, because you're dealing with guys. You're dealing with. I feel like I have to deal with a wide array of people, mm-hmm. you know, whether it's from the inexperience of Marquise Flowers and Darquez Denard to the experience of a Brandon Tate or a Cedric Pierman and whatever you want to call it of an Adam Jones, you know, to dealing with Kevin and Clark and Mike. They're all, I mean, it's 50 different personalities, because they all have to perform different duties. It's not like you're talking to four defensive linemen who are all, you know, playing the same basic responsibilities and techniques. These guys do completely different things. Mm-hmm. So I think that's part of my job, is to have to manage that.
Yeah. I mean, to have a guy like Mike who has that resolve.
Yeah.
I mean, that has to be, that's as big a part as what you want in any kicker, sure, whoever you bring in.
That's why he's our kicker.
Yeah. We talked a little bit about this a couple weeks back, but, I mean, the way the Gunners and Kevin are working together has been pretty phenomenal this year. Yeah. I mean, it's been as good as it gets. I mean, you're just a tick off of best in the league in gross and net.
Yeah, I mean, our Gunners have done a fantastic job. We got a good rotation of three guys. You know, as one of them's role changes, and it could be on a week-to-week basis, you know. Mm-hmm. We make it hard to prepare for just having two guys in there, because we got a rotation of three, and they're all three playing good. You know, they're all. I think all three guys are in the top four in tackles on our team. Mm-hmm. So they've been playing very well. Kevin's been hitting the ball consistently, probably with the exception of this last game. This last game wasn't one of his better games. But I can't imagine, you know, I don't know what we'll be going into the last week of the season. I can't imagine that there's a punter. And I know that Pat McAfee is doing what he's doing. But I can't imagine a punter having a better month than what Kevin's had.
So there's Darren Simmons talking about it. I mean, and I just think the way that he's been able to help Mike Nugent back, I think some of the stuff he was talking about, that being his job to make sure that, you know, he manages that. But that's a bit, man, you think about all the personalities he has to deal with, okay? He has to deal with people like Adam Jones, and then deal with Mike Nugent and Kevin Huber and Clark Harris, and then go deal with all these kids like that are on the team, that are on special teams, like Sean Williams and Marquise Flowers and Darquez Denard. I mean, the amount of personalities you have to manage. I'm often surprised that you don't see more special teams coordinators given head coaching jobs, when you consider that's the closest thing to a head coaching job you can do without actually being the head coach.
I think the unfortunate part of it is it's just the whole chain of command that the offensive coordinator or the defensive coordinator is so involved in the win and the loss, And as much as coaches and organizations talk about special teams as a third part of the game, they don't believe that.
But what is a head coach? A head coach isn't an offensive or defensive coordinator.
No,
a head coach
is fully
managing personalities of the entire team.
But I think the pecking order in this league a lot of times is...
Pecking order's dumb, Skinny.
I don't disagree with you. Actually, special teams coach for a lot of people's eyes is below that of position coaches a lot of times.
Right.
And they're really not. It's for the organizations that know how valuable special teams are, that dude's an important coach.
John Harbaugh.
Right.
Special teams coordinator to head
elevated
coach.
Up.
How'd that work out for
okay.
Baltimore? Pretty
did
good.
Did okay.
Ring.
Yep.
I mean, I think he's a guy that deserves a
I'm
look.
Not, I'm not telling
as
you
a,
he doesn't.
As
you
a head
ask,
coach somewhere, even.
You're asking the question, though, of why. Unfortunately, there's just a hierarchy in the league, and they just get looked down on. Because you see crazy Bobby April and who that guy used to be with the Cowboys was a special. They guys were
right.
Lifetime special teams
yes.
guys. I mean, so.
I'm looking down on you.
I'm sorry.
My pecking order just changed. You're moving down my pecking order. So we talk a little about special teams. I mean, the role they've been playing has been absolutely huge. I want to briefly go into this is the portion of the program where we discuss Giovanni Bernard and Jeremy Hill's split carries, because we do this every week. And we actually had a bit of a change now, because we had our first game seeing what this new mix is going to be since Jeremy Hill's breakout. What we saw was 60% of the snaps to 40% of the snaps for Giovanni Bernard. I thought it'd be the opposite.
I would have thought it'd be complete opposite.
We
yep.
we predicted the opposite, and from what Hugh Jackson had said, I think there was reason to think it would be the opposite. Wasn't. But the touches were 50-50. The touches were an exact 50-50. 19 for Hill, 19 for Giovanni Bernard.
The one thing I wonder is how much Hugh still trusts Jeremy Hill to pass block. That maybe the 60%...
He's done pretty good at
no,
that.
No, I think he has too. But I think he has a trust factor, right, wrong, or indifferent. I've said it before. Just as a pure runner, Jeremy Hill, to me, has got Pro Bowl caliber running back written all over him as we move forward in his career, while Gio Bernard, to me, has the feel of really good, specialized situation player.
Yeah.
But for coaches, sometimes that comfort factor of knowing that seeing a certain blitz, and this guy's done it before, where I think this guy can do it, but I still haven't seen it under fire yet, you just have a bigger trust factor. And maybe, again, as the season continues to evolve, he continues to trust Jeremy Hill a little bit more and a little bit more. But he let him tote it the most of the two of them, carrying the football.
By one. So the...
And it might have been a couple more, because I think he would have... If he hadn't gotten hurt, Paul, I really think he was the closer. He was going to finish the game out as the closer just because of his body type. And
yeah.
then he got dinged on the sideline, so
yeah.
Gio came in. Gio made a great run that got called back by a hole. But I truly think they decided, all right, here's all right, we'll put the closer in right now. We're in our four-minute offense. Go.
The tentativeness of Gio is very apparent when you see him
yep.
come in and out. And honestly, our sample size, which we talked about a lot earlier, of, well, you know, you got to let it play out. These things even out. You're now looking at both have about 130 carries.
It's a pretty good sample size.
I think
size
our
now.
Sample size is big enough.
And the one
guy's
averaging a yard a carry more.
He is. Jeremy Hill, 131 for 643 yards at 4.9 yards per carry. And the way he has closed out games, three of the last four games, the victories, Jeremy Hill has closed them out.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. The play he made at catching the ball out of the flat on third down, and then the play he made, obviously, with a 30-yard run to put him in position for the field goal.
And it's funny.
It was game over. Did the same thing against Jacksonville with a 60-yard run.
Yep.
And he helped run off a four-minute drive in the fourth quarter against New Orleans.
And that 30-yard run might have been a 40-yard run or longer. But
he tried
to stay in bounds.
Stay
very
in
smart
bounds.
Move. But if he decided, I'm going to try to run over this guy, got shoved out of bounds, he might have broken a tackle and kept on going or got
Absolutely.
Another 18 yards. But he made a smart move. The point being, this is a pattern of... All it takes is a little crease for him, and he broke a tackle at the second level, and he's strong enough to do that. Man, you get in situations like that, he's got a chance to completely change the whole thing.
And when guys are tired, and Jeremy Hill's still a little fresh,
yep.
And that's the advantage of it, and I'm okay with this if you do have Jeremy Hill as the fourth quarterback.
Now, let me just tell you, you had almost a perfect scenario yesterday because you had the football for such a long period of time that you were able to do what you needed offensively and get those guys a lot of quality touches. What happens in a game where, for whatever reason, defense maybe scores a touchdown, you go three and out a couple of times, that you don't get yourself in a good rhythm, what happens then? Do you trust to say, Jeremy, I need to get him some touches here, or does it not happen? That's the one that's going to be the interesting one to see how that plays out.
All I know is if you go through a game and you have a guy in your backfield that's averaging 4.9 yards per carry, isn't touching the ball double digits,
you've
misused it. And I think that's just apparent at this point. So, but what we saw the other day, and I'm okay with a 50-50 split if that's what it's going to be. But, man, when you see the difference, when you see Giovanni Bernard yesterday at 2.6 yards per carry and Jeremy Hill at 4.8, this isn't the first time we've brought this up.
Nope.
And the sample size is big enough, you see the difference. And, you know, Gio, he does a lot of nice things for you.
Made a nice play on the third down catch where he turned it up the sideline. Mm-hmm. Was going to probably get the first down, but got even extra yards when he saw a little crease. Got a block, I think, from AJ, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
And got a few more extra yards.
When they were bringing them in and out, all playing off of each other in the one touchdown drive, it worked brilliantly.
I thought it worked out great.
And maybe they're still finding their way with that. But it could be about that time where you start to see a little bit more. So we'll see what kind of goes on with that. Another interesting thing that I want to bring up here to kind of take us a bit off of some of the normal topics is in our Monday press conference with Marvin Lewis. He's always so smooth about these things, you know?
You know what it is? It's like squirrel. It's like he just all of a sudden just blurts out craziness.
Well, yeah, you know, we talked about before we went into this press conference about the idea that this team has thrived off of leaving home after what happened against Cleveland when the crowd was booing.
And rightfully so.
Rightfully so. We're not discussing that. But when you're in that kind of a negative environment where you're just getting hammered.
It's good to get away.
With booze. Sometimes it's good to just get away, have that. The old us against the world mentality, and that brings the team together away from home and get away from that.
Let me ask you this question. If Andy Dalton had thrown that pick six at home yesterday, even though you're still winning the game and you're still on top, how do you think the mood would have turned a little bit? I think it would have turned a little bit.
I think it would have turned. I think you would have definitely gotten some boos. And for a guy that supposedly big game and pressure is supposed to rattle, it's not something you want to be in the middle of.
Exactly.
And we've both talked about before that I absolutely think that the home crowd was a big reason for that night in Cleveland snowballing on Dalton.
Agreed.
Absolutely. That notwithstanding. So we had talked about the idea of the road being good for this team. So you kind of at first asked a question to Marvin, and he didn't want to have anything to do with it.
He
wasn't real interested. He thought he just wasn't feeling it. But then, about 10 minutes later, just kind of decided he's going to just take himself down that road. And so here's what happened towards the tail end of Marvin Lewis's press conference on Monday.
You've been in there when it's closed, opened yesterday. Was that tear gas? Because one.
Well, I don't think, I mean, the environment, the 0-11 playoffs, January 2012, with, their first playoff game in Houston Texans history. I mean, you couldn't emulate that, copy that environment, duplicate that environment anywhere, anytime. That was a special environment they had there. It was not quite the same when we were there for the next time in the playoffs. But what I was amazed at yesterday, when I looked up there at kickoff, I mean, all their people were in the stands. I mean, it was amazing. You know, I was shocked. I said that to Mike Brown on the bus last night on the way to the airport. I said I couldn't believe how their crowd was in the seats at kickoff like that. I mean, it was amazing. And it's. You know, people come out there and they come out to have a good time, but they come out, I guess, to watch the game too. It's good. we play somewhere all the time, but I was really amazed at that. I think, part of nowadays when these stadiums are constructed, they're constructed with acoustics and noise in mind. So whatever engineer that constructed that stadium engineered it still that if the roof's open, it's not going to lose that much that way, you know, because of the fact that the crowd and the fact what's open and so forth, you know. A lot smarter people than me designing those things to make sure they still have an advantage with that roof open.
So that was interesting. So let me just say this, just to start. What was your interpretation of what Marvin was getting at?
I think we've made the observation ourselves at home games that, look, this is a fan. Bengals fans love the tailgate. A lot of, and it happens across the league, but this is a, you grew up here, I grew up here. This is a good party area, man. People like a beverage.
They do.
And a sausage. It's a good thing. I think his point was he sees when they come out right before kickoff and looks and sees this year a lot of empty seats. Some of it is seats that haven't been sold. And then the handful of stragglers kind of adds up. You know what I'm saying? All of a sudden you only got 57,000 tickets sold, so you're already automatically at 8,000 empties. And another 7,000 to 8,000 are still kind of straggling in from the parking lot before kickoff. And hence you look up, and it's not quite the environment you hope it to be. And I think he saw yesterday in Houston that he looked around and saw a pretty robust crowd that was ready from the get-go, and I think it was a little jab at Bengals fans to, hey, if you're coming to the games, I know you're partying in the parking lot, I get that, but come early, get there and be ready when the game is ready.
This is not the first time that he has brought this topic up this year. He brought it up earlier this year, talking about how it'd be great if we could get the fans into the game early, and he goes on to talk about how
he
loves the fans, he thinks they have great fans, and they won all 16 games at home, and he loves the home fan. But here's the thing, I mean, this is again him mentioning, you know, let me just tell you this. I go to all the games. We're in the press box, so sometimes you're a bit withdrawn from it, but you get the feel. What happens at other stadiums, the vast majority, is very different from what has happened at Bengals stadiums, particularly early in games.
Let me tell you, those who may not know, I covered the Bengals back in the 90s for a chunk of time. So really the Baltimore road game for me was the first road game I've been to in a while, and I don't even think I've told you this. I was stunned at how into it that crowd was,
right,
literally from the introductions
right
to the kickoff. It almost overwhelmed me. I thought, whoa, man, these people are into it.
Yeah.
And heck, I walked from our hotel.
It's like that everywhere.
And there was a lot of people partying before the game there, but by golly, by the time that game was about to start, there wasn't an empty seat in the house.
And if in New Orleans, they have
the Houdat.
They have a tradition where one player they pick each game gets to go out to the middle where the field is empty before the kickoff and run out and basically drop a proverbial hammer down and start the loud Houdat chant. And it was deafening, and the place was just absolutely raucous after that. I mean, that's an intimidating environment.
Now, the Houston one's interesting to me because they're coming off 2-14. They're having an okay season. You know, Baltimore, though, has a tradition of, in the last decade or so, being a two-time Super Bowl champion outside of about a decade or so. New Orleans has a recent Super Bowl championship, too. I still think what you're fighting in this town is there's still apathy over lack of ultimate success.
Yeah.
And I understand that.
And that's all fine. Should Marvin Lewis be going down this path?
I was surprised he did because, just for context's sake, I phrased it initially a question of, hey, there's a lot of energy playing at home, but there's also at times there's tension at home. And he kind of flipped it on me and said, what do you mean by tension? What kind of tension? And I said, you know, murmurs when things don't go well. I probably should have said boos, but I use murmurs because it's almost intangible, Paul. You can feel it, can't you? Sometimes when things are going bad, you can feel like, oh boy, crowd's about to turn. And you hear some boos, and then it gets really bad, and they cascade even more.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of what I meant by that. And you're right, he wanted no part of that. But I guess he saw that yesterday, and it just hit him hard. Maybe even the last two games snowballed to where he went, I'd love to have this. Right,
wrong,
or I just want this.
Right.
I want to say I like our fans, and I do. And look, they've had success.
And he does like the fans. And I think his point has been he wants it to sound like it sounds late in the game, early in the game.
Yeah.
And, you know.
Yeah, Bengals fans, when things are going well or you need the defense to rise up late, they're great.
Yeah.
You know, like, you know, they're on their feet, they're yelling, they're ready to go. But, I just, it was an interesting thing.
An interesting thing to bring up.
And it was almost brought up on his own. Now, maybe the seed was planted already, but he just...
It was brought up on his own at the end because
it was in response to another question. Yeah, I can't remember what the question was.
I mean, it was brought up. So, I mean, I think it was a point that maybe he just decided he wanted to get across or just stumbled all over himself, which has obviously happened
before. See, I think sometimes, and we take him for granted a little bit of that. I think even with the Robert Sands answer last week and with this one, I think when he wants to say something without having to be questioned or backed into a corner is when that's when stuff just comes out sometimes.
Yeah.
But I'm going to get this off my chest right here, right now.
Mm-hmm.
Not because you asked me, because I want to.
Right.
Control freak.
Yeah, you're right. It's when it's on his terms, not on your terms.
Right.
Maybe that's why none of our questions ever get answered. We should just stand there and say, do you have anything you want to get off your chest today?
Maybe. I may do it.
But he wouldn't like that either.
Maybe Wednesday I'll start with that.
We all just sit there in silence until he says whatever he wants to say.
Yeah. And then he goes, is there anything? Somebody just blurts out. Is there anything you want to get off your chest?
Yeah, just let it out, coach. Let out whatever it is you got.
Squirrel.
What? You know what? While we're on it, the Robert Sands thing. What a weird scenario that was with Marvin Lewis just basically being told, shut up. They issued a statement.
Not to cover him, but for that reason. To say, dude, you don't have to comment. We've already done it for you. Just
And the statement was pretty blatant that Mercedes Sands is not telling the truth.
Right.
They did plenty to try to help the Sands family. They skipped counseling sessions. They did everything they could, and they released Robert Sands by his value as a football player, had nothing to do with anything else. It was as clear could be, but Marvin was just not having it and wanted to go off and say that he thinks Mercedes Sands is a liar. What got him in trouble, as it often does, was the way he phrased it with, can we talk about something that matters?
Yeah, that's...
I mean, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
You kill yourself. If you want to say that,
can we talk about football? Can we talk about football?
Would have been phrased better. And to say that something that really matters is it just you can't. I mean, it seems to have blown over for whatever that's worth.
Because it became such a he said she said that at the end of the
day, it's what it was,
and there's no resolution to this.
There is no resolution to it at all. But it's just another example of just awkward missteps. You know, these unnecessary.
Yes.
Unnecessary. It was set up. The statement is there. I will stand by that. Even as much as he wanted to get it off his chest and because he felt like he had nothing to hide. And that's fine if you don't feel like it. And that's fine. But
the best things.
It's right there.
Here's the funny part. The best things that come out of anybody's mouth are honest answers, honest feelings. And he comes from the exact 180 of it. He doesn't want to run his own players under the bus. And there's times where honestly, you maybe have to do that. He doesn't want to. He works so hard at not saying the wrong thing a lot of times, that when he blurts things like this out, it really is what he's feeling or the truth or true feelings. And so you get honest answers that sort of thing. Most times you don't, unfortunately, with him, and it becomes a jumbled mess of, you know, what was he talking about there?
Yeah. So what we're saying is, when he speaks honestly and freely, it usually is him. It's not good.
It backfires,
which is probably why there rarely is any sort of answer, maybe. I guess. But I don't know. Press conferences that normally are not very interesting.
There's usually one.
There's been some weird things going on lately.
Concussions earlier in the year.
It's only gonna get weirder as we get closer to the playoffs.
Literally, every week starting now magnifies times 50.
No doubt, it's about to get real interesting because after this Tampa Bay game, it's weeks against Pittsburgh.
And you better make sure you don't go down and lay an egg in Tampa Bay, because then you really got your work cut out for you.
I don't see that happening.
I don't either.
I would say there's a pretty good chance that my prediction loss streak is going to end at 2.
I think most Bengal fans would like you to predict another L just because of the streak you're on.
Yeah. When you're hot like that.
Yep.
When you're hot, you're hot. You never. This would be the one, though. This would be the one where you'd go after you get the two tough ones.
This is Pittsburgh at the Jets.
Yeah.
Right?
This is Kansas City
at Oakland. Yes,
is what it is. A team with a point to prove, you know, trying to playing a little bit better against another one that seems to be full of themselves on the road.
Yep.
Bengals fans better hope that doesn't happen.
No.
Or the booze will come early against Pittsburgh.
Or then you are going to position yourself to where you're going to have to win the last four probably.
Yeah, because we've said all year they got to get to 10.
I think 10's the magic number. But
here's the thing. It's so top-loaded right now. If they would have lost.
Yeah, you got this Houston, great stat. I saw this great stat.
I put this in fifth quarter. If they would have lost that game, they would have gone from.
Right now they're the 3 seed.
They're the 3 seed. They would have gone from the 3 seed to being 9th in the AFC.
It's crazy.
If the result was the opposite in Houston.
That's crazy.
Wrap your brain around that one for a second. And that's how close they are of one or two losses from falling out. There's so many teams right there at 7-4. Even the Dolphins are, they look dangerous right now, and they're lurking.
San Diego's worked itself back to 7-4.
It is far from over that this team's going to make the playoffs. Yeah. That's for sure. No question. Especially when you're firing up two Steelers and a Peyton Manning a trip to Cleveland.
10 wins will get you there. I will promise you if the Bengals get to 10 wins, they will be in the playoffs. I will make that promise right now.
I think you're right.
Because it makes everybody else, the wild cards would have to get to 11, which they could get to, but keep in mind now, that would mean the Dolphins go 4-1 and or the Chiefs go 4-1 and or San Diego goes 4-1 and or Baltimore, Cleveland, and Pittsburgh all go 4-1. And somewhere in there, Pittsburgh plays Kansas City, if I'm not mistaken. The Dolphins play Baltimore somewhere in there. So there's some beat-up-each-other scenarios in there. And obviously the Bengals
are going to have to win one against Pittsburgh. And they're going to have to go to Cleveland to win.
Probably right. That would do it.
I mean, that's what they – at some point, you got to beat some good teams.
Well, that's part of what this is all about, right? Yeah.
I'm just saying.
You can't back into the playoffs unless you are
the 2011 Bengals.
No, or the 2014 Saints, Panthers, and or Falcons.
Yeah, so actually.
First 1-6 wins is in.
Yeah, absolutely. Unbelievable.
Here's the thing. If Tampa wins this coming week against the Bengals, and somehow, they can move within a game of first place possibly in that division.
They're not eliminated.
No, they are not.
Far from eliminated.
Crazy.
Tampa Bay is going to be in the playoffs. That'd be great. Hosting Green Bay.
5-11 hosting Green Bay.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. All right, so let's get out of here.
Okay.
What do you think? You got any ideas for music?
I do. You're not going to like it.
Why? You're going to start it with it. I'm not going to like it. Well, maybe I will like it.
From the school. I'm going to date myself here. Skinny old guy moment.
Skinny old guy moment?
But you probably know some of these. Remember the Schoolhouse Rock days?
Yeah, I know some Schoolhouse Rock.
About 3 is a magic number.
Oh.
For going for 3 in a row on the road.
And needing 3 wins to get to the 10 magic number.
How about that?
Hey. There you go. You know what, Skinny? That's nice.
There you go.
That's well played.
This will take a lot of people back in the day.
It is the magic number.
It is the magic number.
All right. Well, thank you to our Schoolhouse Rock folks for bringing back 3 is the
Jimmy
magic
and
number.
And Susie had a little baby that makes 3. I don't even think they were the right people. I think there were some different people.
I mean, that's fine. You can make up anybody that you want.
Sure you can.
All right, so we've got Ryan Hewitt at Beyond the Stripes here this Tuesday.
Come see his hair.
Yeah, come see his hair. It's dreamy. And then next Tuesday, I don't know if we have confirmation on next Tuesday.
I
thought we did.
We'll wait on that.
Well, should we wait on that?
Teaser.
Yeah, teaser. But if it is confirmed, you'll like him. He's a very big man.
And you know who we need to thank?
Who?
JosephAuto.com.
God bless you, Joseph Auto. We thank you for sponsoring the podcast and all of our content here at Cincinnati.com. We have the podcast up every single Tuesday, so make sure you check it out. And we'll have it up again next Tuesday as well after we get back from Tampa Bay.
For full disclosure, there's no we to that. I got to give you credit. You're the one that produces this podcast.
I do.
And so I'm
you're here?
I'm here. I'm part of the talent portion of it, but you're talent and executive producer and grunt for this, so I give you the credit for that.
I really feel like grunt is probably what should just be on my business card, you know, just grunt. After three road trips in 3 weeks, all to the South, I feel, although I am happy I'm going to the South, I feel like a grunt. I don't look like hell today did last week.
No, you were.
Last week I looked awful. Today I'm pretty vibrant.
I got a text message from you this morning, and I went, wow, he
was on the move.
Doesn't seem bitter at all.
No, I was happy to be I was happy to be alive after I nearly died trying to come in on our little small plane through
which,
the 50-mile-per-hour winds.
I've had that happen a couple times as well. If you travel enough, you've had a couple harrowing landings. Mm-hmm. There was one in these winds about a decade or so. I was coming back from covering Kentucky in the Maui Invitational, and there was a bunch of us on the same flight, a couple riders from Louisville. We all kind of somehow had taken the same flight, and literally right before touchdown, now granted, we were in a DC-10 at the time, too. The left wing dipped down to where literally you are looking at the ground, and
oh,
I don't
boy.
Get scared easy. I literally gripped my chair to the point where I thought, He's going to clip that ground and we're dead. He somehow righted it literally right before he touched down.
Wow.
And I can only imagine what you were bouncing on today in that little 40-seater that you were in.
Oh, yeah. There was a lot of moving back and forth. You could feel the wind just picking up and moving and the uneasiness as they were trying to head in and actually land.
I know we're trying to get out of here, but I am a bit of an airplane geek. My mom and dad both worked for the airlines growing up, and I grew up in northern Kentucky, still live there, actually close to the airport. And sometimes, there's an observation area where you can go watch planes land. And I've done it on a couple of windy days, and when you see it at that, where they are literally turned somewhat sideways, there's a skill to that, obviously. And obviously, they're extremely skilled pilots.
Thank God.
You're right. You don't take them for granted until you go through something like that where you realize that was a pretty good skill. You know, the easy landing on a beautiful sunny day with no wind and no rain and no nothing, hey, that's a jump in the... But on days like this, man, you really earn it.
Yeah, do not take pilots.
Did you kiss the ground?
I didn't kiss the ground. I was just happy. I gave a very sincere thank you to the pilots.
Was there applause? Sometimes there's applause.
There was not applause.
Okay. I think, just a lot of nervous folks.
Yeah, I think there was just a lot of nervous laughter of thank God that we're on the ground. Yeah. So, but yeah, it was harrowing. But hopefully it won't be as bad next week coming back from Tampa, which a trip that I'm excited for because I'm a big fan of Burns Steakhouse down there with the dessert room where you can get the Bananas Fosters.
I'm a big fan of certain establishments along the parkway.
Yeah, are you?
Yeah, along the causeway, rather, not the park, along the causeway.
The Dale Mabry?
Yep, the Dale Mabry.
Yeah, I've been to Tampa many times. All right, so let's get the heck out of here. Let's now bring in our Schoolhouse Rock. There's a little Schoolhouse Rock for you, and we will see you next Tuesday here on Scribe Session.
Magic number.
3 is a magic number. Yes, it is. It's a magic number. Somewhere in the ancient mystic trinity, you get 3 as a magic number. The past and the present and the future, faith and hope and charity, the heart and the brain and the body give you 3 as a magic number. It takes 3 legs to make a tripod or to make a table stand. It takes 3 wheels to make a vehicle called a tricycle. Every triangle has 3 corners. Every triangle has 3 sides. No more, no less. You don't have to guess. When it's 3, you can see it's a magic number. A man and a woman had a little baby. Yes, they did. They had 3 in the family. That's a magic number. 3, 6, 9, 12, 15, 18, 21, 24, 27, 30. 3, 6, 9, 12, 15, 18, 21, 24, 27, 30.
Multiply backwards from 3 times 10.
3 times 10 is 30. 3 times 9 is 27. 3 times 8 is 24. 3 times 7 is 21. 3 times 6 is 18. 3 times 5 is 15. 3 times 4 is 12. 3 times 3 is 9. 3 times 2 is 6. And 3 times 1 is 3, of course.
Now take the pattern once more. 3.
3, 6, 9.
12.
12, 15, 18.
21.
21, 24, 27. 30.
Now multiply from 10 backwards.
3 times 10 is 30.
Going
3 times 9 is 27. 3 times 8 is 24. 3 times 7 is 21. 3 times 6 is 18. 3 times 5 is 15. 3 times 4 is 12. And 3 times 3 is 9. 3 times 2 is 6. And 3 times 1.
What is it?
3!
Yeah,
that's a magic number. A man and a woman had a little baby. Yes, they did. They had 3 in the family. That's a magic number.